Beloved Bhagwan, when Rinzai once visited Horen, Horen said, "Into the sea the moonlight falls clear and shadowless, but the wanton fish deceive themselves." Rinzai commented, "If the moonlight on the sea is without shadows, how can the fish be deceived?" Horen then said, "Seeing there is wind, waves arise. Playing with the water, the rough sail flaps." Rinzai said, "The frog in the moon shines brightly alone, and all rivers and hills are at peace. The long breath of the wind is the voice of autumn in earth and sky." Horen said, "Though you may spread your 3 inches of tongue and illuminate the celestial quietness, just try and say a single word to fit the occasion." Rinzai responded, "When you meet a master swordsman, show him your sword. When you meet a man who is not a poet, do not show him your poem."
Manisa, the way of Zen requires certain conditions to be fulfilled. They are not the conditions that other religions require. They are the conditions of receptivity, of awareness, of listening, of an understanding of the word less a deep penetration into silence. No other religion asks you these things. They want you to be virtuous, to be moral, not to indulge in adultery. Their requirements are very superficial. Zen requires real qualities of being. Only then the master can impart his understanding of the ultimate. In other words, Zen is not a theology, but a being-to-being communion. The disciple has to rise to the same height as the master, otherwise he will miss whatever is being said to him. These qualities will bring him very close to the height of the master. And a master certainly knows at what height you are. And he speaks accordingly. He never wastes a single word or a single moment. This anecdote will explain to you what Rinzai, who is a founder in Japan of the Zen sect, Manisha has brought this small anecdote. When Rinzai once visited Horin, Horin said, "Into the sea, the moonlight falls clear and shadowless, but the wanton fish deceive themselves. Rinzai commented, "If the moonlight on the sea is without shadows, how can the fish be deceived? All deception is taking the shadow for the real. But strangely enough, perhaps you have never observed it, that a shadow itself cannot cast a shadow. Hence the ancient lore that if you see a man without a shadow, remember he is a ghost. Because a real man will have a shadow. Only a man who appears as man but is transparent, you can wave your hand across him and you will not touch anything. He will not make any shadow. The reflection of the moon in the lake is a shadow itself. How it can cast a shadow? That is impossible. But what Horin wanted to say, is not anything unnecessary or non-essential. He said, "Into the sea, the moonlight falls clear and shadowless, but the wanton fish deceive themselves." What they deceive about? What is their deception? What is their illusion? Their illusion is to take the reflection as the real moon. But Rinzai commented, "If the moonlight on the sea is without shadows, how can the fish be deceived? The fish can certainly be deceived, because even men are deceived of shadows. Rinzai's question is clear and from a height of consciousness, but everybody in the world is deceived by shadows. What are all your imaginations? What are all your dreams? Have you ever considered the fact that while dreaming, you never think that this is unreal? While awake, you may think, perhaps all that you are saying is unreal, only a dream. But in a dream, you can never think that it is a dream, for the simple reason that if you are so much aware to experience the dream as the dream will stop. Dream can continue only in a very unconscious, unaware state. The real question is not about the face. The face is only a symbol. The real question is about the man. If the moonlight on the sea is without shadows, how can the fish be deceived? There is only one way to be deceived for the fish, and that is to take the reflection as the real moon. Horin missed the point. He started explaining why the fish gets caught into a deception. That was not what Rinzai wanted him to do. For him, the fish was not the point at all, neither the reflection of the moon. His concern was that what to say about a fish? Even men are deceived of shadows. And not only in dreams, but in actual life when you are awake. Every day you continue to get deceived, but you are not aware, hence it does not hurt you and your dignity. You see a woman very beautiful. And she is certainly beautiful. But where that beauty goes away after the honeymoon? Then the same woman for which you were ready to die one day, now you want to kill her. You can appreciate other women's beauty. I have never heard any husband appreciating his own wife's beauty. Perhaps what he saw was not the real woman as she is. He saw the woman as he wanted to see her. It was a dream projection. And a dream projection cannot prolong long. Sooner or later, the dream projection drops away and suddenly you see the real person. Nothing has changed. The woman is the same, the man is the same. Neither the woman thinks you are the same man she fell into love. Neither you think she is the same woman you had fallen into love. What happened? Just within a week, and if you are intelligent enough, then just the weekend. It depends on intelligence. The idiots can live their whole life. The more intelligent a person is, the sooner he will see his projections, imaginations dropping. The clouds disappearing, and he will see the pure sky without any clouds. And it is going to change his opinion. Rinchai is saying that we are all living in shadows. You think, you project, you imagine, you dream. The greatest lovers in the world were those who never met. Their love is eternal. People sing songs of Siri and Faryad, of Leela and Majnu. Of Soni and Mahiwal. And the only reason why their love is remembered is that they were never allowed by their parents and the society to be together. If Leela and Majnu had got married, you would have never heard their name. Have you ever heard any story, any poetry concerning a married couple? At least I have searched enough, I have not found. It seems to be intrinsically impossible. Because as they come close, their projections start falling. If they are kept away, forced to be away, then their dreams become even more beautiful. Their imagination takes wings. And not only in this matter, but in other matters also you live in shadows, in your hopes. What have you got in your hopes? Just empty imagination that tomorrow something will happen that has not happened up to now. And you will feel fulfilled. It never happens. What happens tomorrow is death. And death creates fear for the simple reason you may not be aware. The fear of death is that it takes away the future from your hands. And you have been living in the future in your imagination. And death comes and puts a full stop, no more tomorrow. Future is simply your idea of how things should be, and the existence has no obligation to you to fulfill your desires and your hopes. People even give promises. People say to each other, I will love you my whole life, not knowing at all that whole life is a long thing. One man was saying to his girlfriend, I will love you my whole life. Then for a moment, he became silent. The woman said, why you have become silent suddenly? He said, just tell me one thing. In your old age, will you start looking like your mother? Because then I cannot give that promise. Suddenly I thought that what I am saying, in the old age this woman is going to look like the mother-in-law. And mother-in-laws just it is strange that people don't suit them. I have heard a hunter was going for hunting into the forest. His wife insisted, and she also insisted to take his mother-in-law with him. Not to create any trouble, he said, okay, there is no harm. You can sit on top of the tree and you can see. The mother-in-law was old enough to climb on a tree. So she was sitting on a small tree, and a lion came near to her. The wife saw it from her tall tree and shouted to her husband that just see, one lion is very close to my mother. The husband said, it is not my problem, it is the lion's problem. Now he has got into trouble. If he wants to get out, he will get out. You just keep quiet. People expect something, it is never fulfilled. There is always frustration all around. People are living in despair, and the reason is that what they expected existence has no desire, no reason to go according to your expectations. If you want to be happy, go along with existence and its ends wherever it takes. That's what I mean by let go. You simply drop your projections, your imaginations, and let the existence take hold of your whole life. Then there is no despair, because there is no possibility of being frustrated. There is no anguish and no anxiety. You are relaxed with existence. Whatever happens, that is good. The whole existence is wiser than me. So whatever happens, Buddha says, suchness, just whatever happens, remember, such is the nature of existence. Don't stand aloof and against existence. Be part and feel a certain oneness. That oneness can be called suchness or isness or thisness. But the meaning is that whatever happens is good. You have to find out the beauty of it and the joy of it. Only such a man can be blissful. Otherwise, there is always the feeling of being deceived. Every man, out of 1,000 men, perhaps one man dies without the idea that he has been deceived by life. But almost everybody dies with the idea that what was it? 70 years you struggled, what is the gain? All your expectations are shattered, all your dreams are broken, all your promises remains unfulfilled. You are dying a bankrupt. Almost everybody dies a bankrupt, as far as his expectations is concerned. Only a man of let go is not deceived by anything. He takes everything that comes in the way happily and joyously, and if things change, he allows the change without any hindrance, without creating any barriers to prevent the change. Such a man knows no deceptions. He knows life have never deceived you, but have always fulfilled those longings which you were not even aware of. Horin then said, seeing there is wind, waves arise, playing with the water, the rough sail flaps. He did not understand that Rinchai is not talking about the fish, and he is trying to explain his own statement without listening to what Rinchai has raised as a question. Rinchai said, the frog in the moon shines brightly alone, and all rivers and hills are at peace. The long breath of the wind is the voice of autumn in earth and sky. Everything is as it should be. So peaceful are the hills in the full moon night. Rivers are at peace, dancing in the full moon night. Because of their dance, the full moon's reflection becomes a silver all over spread. Everything is silent and peaceful. There is no frustration in the hills. There is no frustration in the rivers. Even the frog in the moon shines brightly alone. If you look at nature, just taking the man and his mind away, everything is bliss. Everything is Buddha. It is only the man's mind that creates trouble, because it cannot allow a let go. The long breath of the wind is the voice of autumn in earth and sky. And there is great joy that autumn is coming. The moon is full of blissfulness, and all that shines in the moonlight except man. And man can also be as happy as the hills and as peaceful as the rivers if he looks at the moon and the surroundings without any mind, with no thought. He will also become part of the whole scene. But he remains always concerned with his own stupid ideas. When the whole existence is rejoicing, it is only the man who is worried. Have you seen a tree ever worried? No animal is ever worried. Even in dying, it dies peacefully. Such is the way of existence that anything that is born is going to die. man's mind intrudes, always creates problems because it expects things to be different than they are. He is not ready to accept the suchness of existence. He wants it according to him. This according to him is the whole misery. Everybody is trying that everything should be according to him. One may say it, one may not say it, but even without saying, your mind is weaving thoughts how things should be brought according to your idea. And this is impossible. You cannot change existence. All that you can do, you can drop your mind. Horin said, though you may spread your 3 inches of tongue and illuminate the celestial quietness, just try and say a single word to fit the occasion. Rinzai responded, and his response is of fundamental importance. When you meet a master swordsman, show him your sword. When you meet a man who is not a poet, do not show him your poem. Each according to his worth, each according to his receptivity. You are not yet able to receive one word and understand it. I cannot recite a poem to you because you will not understand. You will certainly misunderstand. I have heard a thief was brought into the court and the court said, why you have entered this man's house? The poor thief said, I have entered to steal something. But the man was so strange that he caught hold of me. I tried hard to escape, but he said, don't be worried. Just sit down and listen. I have written a new poetry. I thought it is better silently to listen. But the poetry went on and on and on. And he was holding my hand. This way the whole night he tortured me. I don't understand a single word what he was saying. And I could not escape either. And by the morning the police came. And now I am standing here before you. Just with only one hope that you will not give me the punishment to listen to this poet again. I am ready even to go to the gallows. I had no idea that this house belongs to a poet, otherwise I would not have entered. Poets are like that. It is very difficult for them to find audience. They go on searching around if they can find somebody. And everybody goes on running away that I have to do some special work, that right now I am not available. Who wants to waste time? Unless you are a poet, Rinzai is saying that don't say anything to a person who is not worthy of it, because that is insulting him, that is degrading him, that is taking his dignity, that is bringing up his unworthiness. So don't ask me for a single word. You are not yet capable of it. You have not understood my single things, and you went on explaining. You are not a fish, and you don't know what goes on in the mind of the fish. Talk about man and talk about his deceptions and find out the reason why he gets deceived. It is his own resistance to existence and an effort to give a mold to the whole life which is not possible. He is trying the impossible and goes on failing. This failure is not just his mistake. It is not that he has not been doing rightly. Whatever he does, he will be a failure. Nobody can be wiser than the cosmic existence. So the wise people allow themselves to go along with the existential river, not even asking where we are going. Nowhere is existence is going. It is simply here, just playing with thousands of forms, thousands of situations, creating more and more consciousness, more and more happiness, more and more love. If it is not happening to you, it simply means you are keeping your doors closed. Just open your heart and relax with existence, and suddenly you will see the frog in the moon shines brightly alone. No company is needed, no richness is needed, just a poor frog, no political position is needed, and all rivers and hills are at peace, and they don't have anything, but they have peace which you cannot purchase. The long breath of the wind is the voice of autumn in earth and sky. Just be with existence wherever it is going. And you will be unworried. Your tensions will disappear. You will be as happy as a child. You will be as beautiful as a flower. Ikkyu wrote, when you break up a cherry tree and look, there are no flowers at all. The flowers are brought by the spring wind. Even though you soar boundlessly, even beyond the clouds, just don't rely on the teachings of Gautama. Two things Ikku is saying. One, you cannot bring the flowers that will come in their own time. You have to wait. You have to be patient. You cannot ask that why the cherry flowers are not coming up. The tree is there. You are watering the tree. You can even, Ikku says, break up a cherry tree and look inside the tree where the flowers are hidden. There are no flowers at all. The flowers are brought by the spring wind. Let the spring come. Let the right moment and the climate and the right wind reach to the cherry tree. It will blossom suddenly. It will explode into immense beauty. And the cherry tree is waiting. It is not in a hurry. It is not running somewhere to catch up with spring. It is simply waiting silently, joyously. Spring comes, even if a day or 2 days late, what does it matter? It has always been coming. Second thing Ikku says, even though you soar boundlessly, even beyond the clouds, just don't rely on the teachings of Gautama. That can be said only by the Zen masters about their own originator. They don't rely on Gautama, the Buddha's teachings. Because his teachings were in a different context. He was talking to different kind of people. You may not be that kind of person at all, and the times have changed. Those teachings may be no more relevant. Only rely on your own consciousness. Even Gautama's consciousness is not reliable. He is not saying that Gautama is wrong. He is saying that Gautama was dealing 1500 years before, and I have told you an instance, just in a single day, in the morning a man asked Gautama Buddha, is there a God? And Gautama said, no, there is no God. In the afternoon, another man asked, what do you think about God? Gautama said, yes, God is. You can understand Ananda, who was continuously with him, the trouble. He started having a migraine. That what kind of man, in the morning he says, there is no God, and in the afternoon he has forgotten completely, and he is saying there is God, and he waited for the time in the night when there will be nobody. But before that, a third person came in the evening, sat down and asked Gautama, I have no conception, either for or against God. Just help me to understand. And Gautama Buddha did not say anything to the man, but on the contrary, simply closed his eyes, remained silent. Seeing this, the other man also closed his eyes and said, he thought perhaps he is going to say something in his silence. And they both remained in silence for 2 hours. The man felt so beautiful and so fresh and so young, so rejuvenated, that after 2 hours he opened his eyes. He was a changed man. He touched Gautama Buddha's feet, thanked him, and told him that I was not expecting that much. You have given me more than I had asked. You have given me a taste. I had come only to ask a question. You have taken me to the experience itself. I will remain my whole life grateful to you. In the night, Ananda said, you should at least think of me. The whole day I have been in such a trouble. What kind of man you are? In the morning you say no, in the afternoon you say yes, in the evening you don't say anything, just remain silent. And that fellow gets the answer and you have not said anything. Buddha said, the first man I said, there is no God, was an atheist. And he has come to get a confirmation of his atheism. That Gautama Buddha also is an atheist, then there is no problem. Atheism is certainly the right approach. There is no God. The second man has also come for confirmation of his own prejudice. He was a theist and he wanted a support. They were not seekers. They were only asking for consolation. They had already got the idea. They were simply asking you to support their idea. And they were satisfied with their idea without ever moving into any new space. But the third man was really a seeker. He plainly said, "I don't have any idea. Far or against." For such a man, only silence is the answer. And because he had no prejudice, seeing me closing the eyes and becoming silent, he immediately understood the hint. He closed his eyes and he went deep into silence. Although I have not said anything to him, he went away immensely rich than he had come. And Ananda, Buddha said, "You should not be disturbed because none of these questions were yours. It is not your problem." He said, "It is not my problem, but I have ears and I am always close to you." Buddha said, "You will have to learn it. That I don't have any fixed philosophy that I can hand over immediately ready-made answers. I have to see the person, his capacity. I don't want to insult anybody. I don't want to give something which they cannot understand, which is going to be beyond their heads." If this was the situation in his own time, Ikwe is right, just don't rely on the teachings of Gautama. Find out your own sources, go deeper into your own being. You will find there the affirmation of Gautam Buddha, but don't rely on the teachings. Just don't sit with the scriptures, reading them for years, studying in them for years. That is not going to help. Gautam Buddha has not read those scriptures before he became enlightened. So it is absolutely certain that they cannot be the cause of anybody's enlightenment. Just do what he did. Don't be too much concerned what he said. Whatever he said was meant for his contemporaries. For his time, for the people he was talking to, but do what he did. He became a no mind. And becoming a no mind, you will have to throw even Buddha and his scriptures. out of your being, in this emptiness only, there is a possibility of the cherry blossoms of your being to come from the potential to the actual. You can bring the spring by bringing the no mind. As no mind comes, thousands of miracles follow. But don't desire those miracles. If you start desiring them, you will never have the no mind, because those desires will not allow the mind to be empty. So remember, it is one of the most significant things for a seeker that he should not become too much concerned about the search. He should remain playful. If there is a truth in the existence, someday, somewhere, I am going to encounter it. But don't be serious. Just be playful. In playfulness, you are relaxed. And relaxation, utter relaxation, you will find the Gautam Buddha himself. So why bother about his teachings? When you can find Gautam Buddha himself, then why bother about dead scriptures? Ikku is right, absolutely right. Manisha has asked a question. Beloved Bhagwan, is the witness a presence or simply an absence? The absence of identification with body and mind, Manisha. It is a difficult question. Difficult only because your mind never accepts contradictions. An existence absolutely is in favor of contradictions. In fact, existence is made of contradictions. So these two words, presence and absence, both are right. In the witness, there is absence certainly of your personality, of your mind, of your thoughts, feelings, anything that you are carrying within your mind is absent. If you look from this side, it appears no mind is empty mind. But the moment all these things are emptied out, the potential of your being starts growing a new presence which was hindered from growing by all the furniture that you have been carrying in the mind. Now that all that furniture and all those stones are thrown and the soil is ready, there comes a new presence. So both are there as far as your mind is concerned. Meditation is an effort of creating absence. But when the mind is really absent, in that silence, in that unlimited space, your potential starts glowing, radiating, flowering. Suddenly you are full of cherry blossoms, a new presence, a new fragrance. So absence and presence are both together in your meditation. On the one hand you are emptying, on the other hand the empty space is being filled with your potential. There was no space for it to blossom. Meditation is simply creating a space for your potential to come to flowers. A man of meditation has such a presence. That you can feel it. In my dining room, I have got a small statue of Buddha. It is only a statue, but when Jayesh came for the first time and saw it, he said, this statue has a great presence. And I have loved that statue and carried it from India to America, from America to India, because it has a presence. It is only a statue, but a statue of a meditating Buddha. Something of meditation in that very posture radiates a very alive aura. I have brought another statue for your Buddha auditorium to be placed just on the gate. So you can see that even the statue, because it is in a meditative posture, radiates something. Just sitting by the side of the statue, you will find something flowing from the statue towards you. It is not a worship. It is just being silently close and watching the posture. Because the posture is of meditation, something of meditativeness, even from the stone, radiates. So when you are meditating, you are doing both the things. On one hand, you are throwing away all that is garbage. And on the other hand, you are helping roses to blossom. You will have an absence and you will have a great presence together. Absence of all that was ugly in you and presence of all that is beautiful. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. I hope he is still in his rainbow colored turban. that turban has a special presence. It is the farewell party at the White House for Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan. Everybody gets pretty drunk, and Nancy Reagan offers to give George Bush, the president-elect, a private tour of the presidential bedroom. When they get back to the party, George Bush looks for Ronald Reagan and finds him slumped on a couch, fast asleep. "Hey, Ronald," says Bush, shaking Reagan roughly, "do you have any pictures of Nancy in the nude?" "What?" mumbles Reagan in shock. "You idiot." "Of course I don't." "Okay," says Bush, holding up his camera. "Wanna buy some?" Doris and Jeff Dull have been married for 6 years and have 3 kids. But Jeff has a strange habit. He will only make love with the lights off. Doris puts up with this for as long as she can. But one night her curiosity gets the better of her. She and Jeff are making love in the usual way, when suddenly she snaps the light on, and to her horror, she sees that Jeff is making love to her using a cucumber. "You impotent wimp," shouts Doris. "So this is why you never wanted the lights on. It is disgusting. Explain yourself." "Okay, dear," says Jeff calmly. "I can explain the cucumber if you can explain our 3 kids. Adolf Hitler pushes the doorbell at the pearly gates of heaven and demands to be admitted. He kicks up such a fuss that Saint Peter calls Jesus to come and deal with the situation. "I want to come in," cries the Führer, "and I will reward you highly if you let me stay." "What do you mean?" asks Jesus. "You cannot possibly come in. Just look at what you did on earth." "Look," says Hitler, taking Jesus to one side, "if you let me in, I will personally present you with Germany's highest award for bravery, the Iron Cross." "Really?" says Jesus. "That's a very tempting offer. Just let me make one phone call." So Jesus dials up God the Father. "Dad," says Jesus, "I have got Adolf Hitler here at the pearly gates and he wants to come in. What do you think?" "Jesus Christ," shouts God, "are you kidding? The guy is a psychopath." "I know, Dad," says Jesus, "but you see, he has made me this terrific offer. He wants to give me the Iron Cross." "The Iron Cross?" shouts God in amazement. You idiot, look what happened when you got that wooden one. Nivedana. Be silent. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Now look inwards with your total life energy, with your total consciousness. And with an urgency, as if this is going to be the last moment of your life, only with urgency you can reach to the center of your being. And at the center of your being, you are the Buddha. To realize this, is to create the right space for all kinds of transformations in your life. Let this experience sink into every fiber of your being. The Buddha has only one quality, and that quality is witnessing. The Buddha is made of witnessing, of watching. Just watch. And in your very watching, your Buddhahood deepens. This evening, this moment, you are the very fortunate ones on the earth. Because to be a Buddha is to be a Himalayan Everest of consciousness. then you don't have to follow any discipline, any morality. All that is good comes behind you like a shadow. Just remain a witness around the clock. Whatever you are doing, do it with full awareness and with a grace that shows that you have recognized the Buddha in the deepest core of your being. To make it more clear, Nivedano. Just watch, be a witness. You are not the body, you are not the mind, you are simply the witnessing. And this witnessing is the Buddha. The spring has come, and the cherry tree has blossomed into thousands of flowers. Collect as many flowers and as much of witnessing . Persuade the Buddha to come from the hidden secrets of your life into the circumference, into your day-to-day life. He always has come, just the right persuasion. And showing him your worthiness by witnessing. Collect as much of this relaxed moment, of this let go, before Nivedana calls you back. This moment, the Buddha auditorium is no more the gathering of 10,000 Buddhas. It has become a lake of tremendous consciousness without any ripples. You are the fish in the ocean. Don't ask where the ocean is. Nivedana, come back and bring your Buddha with you. Silently and gracefully. Sit for a few moments just to remember where you have been, what golden path you have followed, what is your center like the silence, the beauty, the blissfulness. You have to spread it on your circumference. In every action, in every gesture, in every word, in every silence, you should remain a Buddha in spite of any situation. Being with me, you have got an opportunity which is no more available anywhere on the earth. It used to be available in many, many places. Those golden days have passed. My effort is to give you a glimpse of those golden days where thousands of people in different places were trying to reach to the ultimate consciousness, to your immortality, to your eternity. Without reaching to your center, you are a cherry tree which will never find its spring. The moment you reach to your center, you allow the spring to come to you. Your whole life becomes a dance, a poetry, a song. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagavan.